Welcome everyone to the Local Shop Podcast. I should start by saying it's very easy now to subscribe to the Local Shop Podcast. We have our own channel. If you're using iTunes or Spotify or any other place where you can get podcasts, you can subscribe. Just click the button. And that means that I think when you subscribe, you get the podcast a few hours before you would otherwise. So when we're reacting to key events, you will get it first. So absolutely do that now. I'm joined today to talk about technology by James Lohman, our Chief Executive.
Hello.
And Steve O'Neill from PayPoint.
Hello.
And I think over the last year there's been some significant talk about changes in technology. And I don't think there's been I don't think there's been anything bigger than around data, particularly around GDPR regulations and around the way that we use data. And it's something that we hear from retailers all the time about, are they using the data they've got? Do they have enough data? Steve, what's your take on whether there is enough data out there for retailers, and are they using it properly?
So I think data is a fascinating and frustrating topic, I think. One, in terms of, I think there's been lots of talk for a long, long while now about big data. And people use the phrase big data. We've all probably seen presentations with the words big data in, but do we really understand what that means? Now, actually, kind of, I think, do retailers have lots of data? Yes. Are they using it? Probably not.
And do you think retailers know that what they've got actually is data that's usable?
No, because actually, kind of, I think it's hard enough if you're a data expert, if you're a data scientist, to actually kind of make sense of data. Given retailers aren't necessarily data experts, that sort of makes it sort of doubly difficult to be able to kind of, one, access that, two, then do something with it, and three, make it improve your business. So I think there's really kind of, certainly from kind of what we see, is that, I mean, if you look at kind of EPOS systems as an example, so nothing new, been around for kind of, you know, a long, long time. But sort of my analogy, you know, taking the time of the year, we're in January, everyone's making New Year's resolutions, that I think EPOS systems are a little bit like gym memberships, that sort of fundamentally there's lots of people that have them, but actually you only really get the results if you use them.
They're very difficult to leave as well.
Yes, very difficult. Yeah. Also very difficult to leave. I think there's undoubtedly a lot of information, a lot of data that retailers are sitting on. And there are some pretty good but sort of isolated examples out there amongst the industry of people who've really grasped it, really kind of, you know, sort of analysing every square inch of their store and kind of really kind of making decisions kind of driven by that. But essentially, kind of, if you kind of take it out of the realm of independence, actually you can bet your bottom dollar that sort of big grocers and multiples have oodles and oodles of people really kind of focused on this. So really the question would be, right, okay, how can you kind of replicate that sort of data integrity? How can you replicate that sort of analysis that would kind of really kind of arm independent retailers to kind of make more positive decisions? And I think if everyone kind of looked at themselves in the mirror and said, right, okay, am I really kind of, you know, understanding everything that happens in my store, actually kind of making data-driven decisions, actually kind of, I think there's probably quite a lot of retailers who would kind of go, yeah, maybe I could do better on that. Yeah.
And it's also the availability of some of that data, isn't it? Because if you take a very well-known example that we talk about quite a lot, about the Tesco Club Card, and they've sort of completely revolutionised the way that we use shopper data, do you see a way where independent retailers are going to have access to that kind of information and that actionable insight?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it really depends on sort of what kind of platforms or tools you're using to help you do that. So a really good example is Mo Razak up in Scotland. So kind of he's really, really advanced just in terms of the technology that he's using. So he's using a platform that sort of connects his EPOS data with sort of, you know, being able to kind of market specifically to customers, and sort of it's all a sort of nice virtuous circle. And he's seeing some pretty good results from that. But actually kind of it's very much about, does Mo have the time himself to kind of sit down and crunch that data? No. Yeah. But actually kind of if he puts finds the right platform and the right partner to work with, absolutely. Now, Mo's a kind of an example at the top end of the spectrum. So I guess, you know, kind of moving it down to sort of, you know, the mass of independent retailers out there, I guess it's really about sort of focusing on the basics. So actually kind of, you know, I think that there's a tendency, I think, to sort of start to kind of run away to kind of probably too overcomplicated, too kind of sophisticated things when it comes to data, but actually you should just strip it back down and really kind of go, right, okay, what are the kind of fundamentals of my store? And actually, kind of, you know, you guys will know that sort of, you know, there's a great sort of retail instinct that sort of comes from independent retailers, and I think that's something to kind of cherish, that's something to kind of keep hold of. But I think there's also a tendency to over rely on that instinct, and I think the really
and they can only focus on certain things at certain times. I mean, there'll be parts of the store that will be probably underperforming that they just. Just, you know, you get a bit of blindness where you get past it.
Yeah, and certainly kind of, you know, in our experience, we see a lot of retailers who are kind of saying, well, you know, I'm keeping track of my sales because it's all up here, it's all in my head. Mm. Now, actually, that's fine for the stuff you're selling, but what about the stuff that you're not selling?
Yeah, and the customers who aren't coming into the store. I think one of the points to remember in this is that independents are probably actually starting from a much better position than multiples because they have got a much richer group of data sources, qualitative and quantitative, because in many cases they live in that community, they've been there for a period of time. So what a lot of the larger retailers are doing is trying to work out for this particular site what's the right range for that store, and they have to use data to get to the answers on that. An independent's got a great starting point because they might only have one store, even if they've got a few, they know those stores very, very well. But I mean, everything Steve said is absolutely right, of course. I mean, are retailers using and understanding the data they've already got is probably the starting point that's been touched on. And a question I sometimes ask retailers, when was the last different report you ran off your EPOS system? Mm-hmm. You know, whether that's to look at a different category or to look at times of day, whatever else it might be. So, you know, the starting point I always say is think about the data you've got and could you use that in a slightly different way? I suppose the first step forward is rather than using your EPOS data to say, this is how much of these different SKUs I've sold and breaking it down by category and so on, is probably then look at the customers and what are the links between the things that different customers are buying. And of course, you can take that
quite far in looking at other things about customers as well. Absolutely. But there is, of course, as I mentioned at the start, there's a real change in the responsibility around data as well. So, using signing up customers automatically to things is no longer possible. So I think we just have to be a bit careful about how close they want to get to the customer data.
But another great example of where an independent has got an advantage because they're not identified by a unique reference number. They're identified by being Chris or Steve or whatever they are. And I think the stage beyond that is then thinking about other data sources that aren't typically used, haven't been typically used in our sector. So, you know, that's about much more detailed demographic data of who's around in the local area, both living there and people who visit and move through the area. So there's loads more phone data now that's available that can break down the demographics of a location. And again, to a large extent, independent retailers will have a pretty good feel for that because they'll know the area very well. But it doesn't mean it's a perfect read of what's happening in that area. Are there offices and other working populations close by that maybe the store isn't catering to as well as it could because they think, well, we're a high demographic, low demographic area. Certain, there's a sort of we almost stereotype an area for having certain characteristics that may not tell the whole story. Mm. So a lot of these new data sets do it. And really, just to finally echo Steve's point about it's the links between that data and obviously what Mo's doing. I mean, we have a technology showcase on 5th of February where Mo will be, and so looking forward to hearing his story
we'll
hear much more about that. But you know, certainly from the last year when I've been thinking about and talking to a lot of retailers about technology, it's the links between the different data sets and different technologies, that's where the power is. So it's that, you know, your electronic shelf edge labels are talking to your EPOS, are talking to your social media, are talking, you know, so everything is working together. That's where the power comes from. But as Steve said, the challenge is there. As an independent retailer, how do you deal with all that information? How do you use that to arrive at meaningful decisions? And I think what we're seeing now are more platforms that are there to help retailers to do that. And to me, that's the journey we'll go on the next few years to the point where that data becomes much more usable, whether you're a small retailer or a larger retailer.
And a lot of that data, once you get to that point where you have it all and everything's talking to each other, a lot of people are talking about the answer to that being some form of artificial intelligence where it starts making decisions for you. We know about supermarkets making decisions on ranging, especially on vegetables and things, based on incoming storms and weather patterns over the coming weeks and months, and that really helping them to range properly. From an independent level, and I have a bit of a sort of reticence about true AI, as or whether it's just a bit more of a complicated spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But are we going to see AI being used in stores to do automatic ordering, automatic ranging, and take that out of, you know, what is traditional retailing?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly from an AI perspective, again, it's another fantastic buzzword that is probably being overused at the moment, like a lot of things to do with technology. And I think fundamentally, AI for me is about sort of taking care of the dull stuff so you can focus on the important stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not quite the robots taking over. And sort of, you know, removing jobs and sort of, you know, kind of making, removing people from the environment. But it's about sort of how do you optimize? How do you make your operations more efficient and make smarter decisions? So I think AI is really the kind of algorithms on speed, really, you know, kind of, and that exists today. I think then in terms of if you kind of look at, if you took the Amazon Go example, so, you know, we're expecting Amazon Go to sort of, you know, come to the UK this year, mm-hmm. Sort of looking at the operation over in America, actually kind of the really kind of striking thing is that sort of actually they're using buzzwords like AI and deep learning and sort of all that kind of stuff. But fundamentally what they're doing is they're letting that do the heavy lifting. Yeah. For all the kind of dull, operational, non-value-adding stuff. And actually, kind of, I've never seen so many people in my entire life in a convenience store. It absolutely wasn't what I was expecting to see.
Sure.
But actually, kind of, you know, therefore you've got people there doing what people do best. Talking to customers, absolutely. Making product recommendations, helping out. And so actually, kind of, it's a really interesting thing when you kind of dissect, say, some of the HIM data around what is driving people to store. People has always been in there. You know, it's a big driving factor. Yeah. You know, James was talking about that being a kind of point of differentiation and advantage for independent retailers in terms of those connections and those relationships. So I think actually kind of the Amazon example, rather than something to be afraid of, because I think actually it's going to be incredibly difficult and costly to scale, actually there's a lot to learn from that in terms of how can you use technology to make you more efficient, mm-hmm. to then free your people up to do things like customer service, thinking about sort of new opportunities. Mm. So kind of it's almost giving you the headspace to be able to kind of hunt down those kind of broader opportunities rather than kind of focusing on filling out the shelf or sort of, you know, doing the shelf edge labels or sort of, you know, doing the crunching of data. I think the more it can be just intuitive and automatic, the better for retail.
And this is a question we have quite a lot, both in the sector and with government as well, about productivity.
Yeah.
And what does productivity actually mean? Is it cutting workforce or is it repurposing them to do things that will give more value to your business?
Yeah, I think in our sector, there is that trend, but I think it manifests differently to how it would in some other industries. So in an Amazon warehouse, for example, or an Ocado warehouse, it can be hugely automated and it's immensely impressive, the things that they've done. But in a public space, if you like, in a shop where the general, you know, you can't have the machines doing the same thing. It has to be presented for humans who are entering the store. I mean, maybe it's a conversation about whether it's going to be robots visiting the store in the future, but that's probably quite a long way off. So our customers are still humans. So therefore, creating that environment for humans is definitely going to involve human tasks being done, even if it's driven by much more data. And I agree what Steve said about AI. And what you're saying about spreadsheets as well, you know, I think ultimately it's just about just better use of data, and you know, the more efficient and effective the programs can be to do that. So I think that the idea that, you know, Amazon are about 50-50 now, aren't they, in terms of their labor being in warehouses being carried out by computers or by humans, and I'm sure they'll continue to move that down to 45-40. I'm not sure what the end point of that is, but that'll happen. In stores, I think it's harder to do that, or certainly to see it on that sort of scale. Also, in stores, you've typically got two or three people in there. So if you're going to go from three to two, well, that's a, you know, it's one third. You're making quite big chunky savings if you're going to do that. And already, retailers have been trimming back staff hours and trying to become as effective and efficient as possible. And data and information and technology definitely will play a part in that, but only to a certain point. But I just completely agree that the opportunity here is that you're getting more of the automatable tasks being done by computers in one form or another. And I don't think it's actual physical robots buzzing around the shop floor, by the way, but more things being done by that. Then people can then do the things that only people can do. And I say that, you know, computers are getting more and more sophisticated.
Yeah, it depends on
in terms of things they do. But nonetheless, you know, that interaction, that knowing people, that building that relationship, which they're, you know, computers are building towards doing more of that, but that personal relationship and making eye contacts and all those sort of things which only humans can do, that's such a big part of convenience retailing. And Steve referenced the HIM data. You know, generally what the it's different to different age demographics and so on. But basically what that says is location is the most important reason people visit a store. The relationship with the people in the store is the second most important reason. So it's a massive part of that.
And just to pick up on two things you mentioned there about robots visiting the store and then things that only people can do. One area where we're seeing that change, we're seeing a lot of trials, is around vehicle technology and people not necessarily having to leave the house to get their car filled up. People will come to you and do that for you. Or even if you do want to go to a petrol forecourt, not necessarily having to leave the car at all to go through the process. Is that a challenge? Is it practical? Do you see it happening? And what are the other opportunities for vehicle tech, connected tech? People, you know, eventually, if you're not even driving your car, if you're not making the decision about where you go to fill up the car, where does that leave retailers?
Mm-hmm. Well, it probably brings us back to data, again, or roads lead back to it. So, I mean, I think the autonomous vehicles, I mean, I think I'm right in thinking, and I'm sorry to get a bit nerdy, but I think we're at sort of level two at the moment, which is sort of, it can do a bit of stuff, but you wouldn't get insured.
Yeah, you can take your hands off the wheel but keep them very close.
And I think it's level five or six where you could truly sort of either not have a human in the car, the vehicle and whatnot. So I think we're a little way off from that, but certainly we've seen, just in terms of investment in payment technologies, sort of embedding those sort of, you know, within cars, obviously all the kind of typical sort of audio and entertainment stuff that sort of, you know, kind of we'll all be a little bit more familiar with within cars. So actually kind of it's just becoming almost another channel. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that we might treat social media as a channel to reach people and web as a channel to reach people, the car is becoming almost a sort of a way of reaching people again with messages and sort of whatnot. And so
I guess, it's a good point, because if you've got Laurie says talking now about using MPOS to do things, if the car is a mobile platform, yeah, you can then start advertising those products while people are waiting.
Yeah, and I think actually kind of, you know, it'd be interesting to see where the line is in terms of, obviously kind of at the moment, you know, we're sort of rightly very strict in terms of not distracting people when they're driving, but when you're not driving anymore, you probably will want to be distracted in the same way that you might do if you're taking a train or taking a bus. So actually kind of that sort of becomes an opportunity to influence again. Actually kind of certainly in terms of kind of the, you know, if your autonomous car is making the decision for you based on the data that it has available, then it's not a million miles away from sort of what exists right now in terms of local search on Google. So actually kind of, you know, kind of the decisions that Google is making in terms of what it presents to you, if you're kind of searching at sort of 11:30 in the evening, you know, how many stores are open now, mm-hmm. you know, show me a store that's open now, actually kind of, you know, it will just be an evolution of that. So actually kind of it then becomes important in terms of, one, how you're presented online. So sort of, you know, what's your presence like? Are you kind of presenting the right kind of information so you can be discovered?
Yeah, real-time information.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, whereas at the moment, that's sort of fairly basic in terms of, you know, kind of opening hours and maybe a little overview of that. I mean, who's to say that actually kind of, you know, you wouldn't be able to kind of have your full inventory on there?
Absolutely.
So actually kind of, you know, you can go on there, kind of go, if I'm going to make the journey out, then actually I can sort of select it. It will be there for me when I get there, so I've got that sort of certainty. Or actually kind of, you know, the reverse of that, that sort of the emergence of sort of local home delivery, I think, is a really, really interesting one. It's almost like Arkwright is back, you know, kind of in terms of that sort of local delivery. I know, James, you've said that, or bemoaned the fact that sort of national newspapers pull out the photo of Ronnie Barker every time that they talk about convenience stores.
But specifically the Times.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of people who are still stuck in that sort of, in that mode. But actually, kind of, you know, if I kind of think to, it's kind of going back to what my dad's first job was, a delivery boy for a greengrocer. So it's almost going back, if you look at what's happened with Just Eat.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of that hasn't wiped out physical stores. In fact, it's sort of, you know, just putting a kind of digital overlay on physical locations that are still thriving, still existing, but giving them a way of accessing a bigger market. And actually, kind of not a lot's changed, actually, in terms of the kind of the takeaway experience, apart from I'm now doing it on an app.
Absolutely.
Rather than phoning the guy up and kind of getting him to deliver to me. So I think that's potentially an opportunity sort of beyond, or sort of where it potentially leads to, on the data front, around how are you presented online, one, from an autonomous vehicle perspective, that potentially presents you with some opportunities. But secondly, kind of if you go the other way, actually from a local delivery perspective, yeah. I think that's potentially an emerging sort of opportunity.
I think there's something around there as well about how people's homes are changing. Yeah. And so, you know, people now, I don't know myself, but like the Nest at home, where you're sort of controlling from outside the home what your heating is and so on. Very short steps, that being with ovens and things like that as well. An example I was struck by is a retailer we featured at our conference before, Constantine Bay Stores in Cornwall, big second homes community down the beautiful part of the world. And if you're flying into Newquay from your office or wherever in City Airport, whatever, I'm not sure if it flies to Newquay. I mean, you're flying in there and you say you're going to be a bit late, they will put your dinner in the fridge. They'll have keys to your house and they'll go in and they'll put that in the fridge. Well, what's the step there to it then being put in the oven? And then on your phone, you then turn the oven on when you land at Newquay or whatever, you know. And so when you get there, it's already on its way to being cooked. So I think there's these sorts of things will enhance that role. And it's the Ronnie Barker image or David Jason on his bike, but it's, you know, it also goes to this whole idea of almost being sort of on concierge for the people around us. And this already happens. You know, there's plenty of stores that keep keys for people. There's plenty of stores that organise cleaning, watering plants, gardening, all this sort of thing. This happens, but because it happens on a very local basis, we necessarily see it as a sort of service that we sort of pull together and measure. And I think there's a real opportunity for the store to be the link between the physical link, providing those physical services of getting people in and the food physically appears in your oven or your fridge.
I suppose that's because of the local network.
Because the local network, yeah. You know,
it's 50,000 stores.
It's the bit that makes all the online interaction work. It's just that little physical element.
I mean, fundamentally, this all comes back to convenience. So yeah. we work in the convenience sector. We would hope we are experts in convenience. Now, Amazon is a convenience brand. Yep. Actually, it is convenient for me to sit here right now, order a lovely gift for you two, and to get it delivered to my desk in 2 hours' time. That's very, very convenient for me.
Your desk, or
yet to decide. Yeah. So depends on the gift is. Depends on the gift is. I think fundamentally, then, if Amazon at its heart is a convenience brand. Yeah. Actually, it's kind of saying, right, almost the kind of the challenge to us as a sector is kind of saying, right, well, if we're the so-called experts at convenience, then actually kind of what can that mean in a 21st century sort of context with all of these sort of technologies out there, some which are emerging, some which are mass adoption, and actually kind of how do we knit all of that together? And actually kind of I think there's, again, a kind of a real opportunity that, yes, technology plays a role in that, but actually kind of I think it's really, really difficult for retailers to kind of sort of navigate through that. So kind of actually kind of, you know, I think I've sort of said before that there's lots of solutions looking for problems. There's lots of shiny things out there from a technology perspective. We had the Consumer Electronics Show last week over in the States, and I think it's sort of lost the plot a little bit in that sort of, you know, there's lots of, if you want to buy a robot that will fold your clothes for you, that's the show to go to. But I didn't see many people, as I throw things into my wardrobe every week, basically kind of like really kind of crying out for that.
So yeah, the most amazing thing I saw at the CES stand was there was a wardrobe that would sort of iron your clothes, sort of steam iron your clothes for you. And it was literally a wardrobe with an iron at the bottom of it, pointed upwards, that shakes.
Yeah.
And this is the Samsung. This is one of their key products. It's just a shaky wardrobe, and I've got one of those.
Yeah.
I don't need another one. So yeah, but when you talk about Amazon being a convenience brand, being a disruptor, Just Eat we mentioned earlier, being disruptors, I think the convenience sector probably has been one step removed from a real disrupting platform. And we talked about the wide reach that convenience stores have. If we're getting to a point where people are looking for ultimate convenience, which is don't even move, don't even leave the house, what role do convenience stores play in that? Because we're already seeing a lot of parcel collection, parcel delivery to stores. Is there a future for stores where convenience stores, more and more space is given to that almost warehousing, that delivery, that fulfillment, and we're seeing armies of drones leaving stores and popping out the roof and going out to estates?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I'm not so certain about the drone thing.
Especially not in Twickenham, which you're quite close to Heathrow,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah. And I think some of the trials that have been going on, the one that strikes me is the one in Milton Keynes using little robots.
Yeah.
Sort of trundling along Milton Keynes, basically, and you know, if maybe it's just my instinct from when I was a kid, but sort of, you know, that just feels like Target, sort of like written all over it. Just in
either,
terms
either
of
either steal it or ride
but
it,
you're, yeah. You're, or do something to it. Yeah. So I think it's certainly the kind that, I mean, again, if you kind of look at the kind of the prevailing winds just generally around sort of the role of a convenience store in the local community. So, you know, as services keep getting closed down and the convenience store is the one that's picking up the slack in terms of kind of keeping local services going, whether that's banking, post offices, et cetera, you know, kind of the convenience store is increasingly becoming that hub anyway, just in terms of a kind of local fulcrum for the community and where they can do a whole range of things. I think the parcel thing's quite interesting, actually. I mean, certainly from the parcel side of our business, actually, kind of, you know, there's a lot of kind of talk, particularly within urban environments, around pollution, congestion, you know, the particularly London, where, you know, kind of certainly in terms of the whole range of lorries and sort of whatnot that are kind of swilling around, ironically, sort of, you know, fulfilling our desire to have more stuff, right? So it's our fault. You know, kind of, we're buying more stuff and therefore sort of we want our stuff, so therefore there needs to be more people going around delivering that stuff. Now, actually, kind of, just in terms of a pure economics thing, forget the environmental point, actually kind of delivering to one store rather than 10 addresses immediately is sort of, you know, logically more sensible.
Yeah.
You know, kind of when you're kind of talking about sort of, you know, how do you make the cost model work and kind of really about sort of how do you kind of lessen that environmental.
This is a big issue, isn't it? Because a lot of the people that are offering free delivery, a very low-cost delivery, are finding that, especially in the fashion industry, with the amount of returns that there are, it's just losing people a lot of money at the moment. And they're getting to a point where the business model is not going to work if they don't do it, because everyone else is, but they can't keep on the
and there are other social costs. I think Steve's absolutely right to about the social costs of it. You know, the and you know,
lorries blocking roads.
Lorries blocking roads. I've talked about that quite a few times, haven't I? My road, I've done a lot. But you know, these externalities do arise. And you know, we're talking about, it's not a subject today, we're talking about this year about deposit return schemes, for example. We're talking about all the, you know, employment issues, big issues for retailers. Well, how's online to cope with that then? Are online retailers going to be, those deliveries going to be compelled to take back packaging? Now, maybe they should. Maybe that's a really good debate to have.
But there is a sort of a lack of responsibility from some of these online companies, the disruptors, the Just Eats, the deliveries, who just say, we are a tech company.
So subcontracted.
And with Uber and employment rights and status, they just say,
We are just a platform.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, certainly, my perspective, and I think in KCS's perspective, isn't that there should be punitive measures against those sort of companies. It's all good development. It's all, you know, it's all meeting customer needs, and it's all part of a really vibrant debate on that. But they have to look at and meet their social costs just as we do as physical retailers. And so sometimes I get frustrated when that's maybe slightly left out of the debate. So it's our job to make sure it's part of the debate.
Well, and I think it just, you know, kind of taking it on a step further, if you look at, say, the plastic bag levy, that actually kind of, you know, well, should there be an online equivalent of that? So actually kind of, you know, kind of one to make us all think twice around sort of, you know, kind of the amount of stuff we're ordering and actually kind of, you know, how that kind of works. But I think, you know, kind of fundamentally, you know, whether it's using it as a kind of way to kind of cement a convenience store's position as that hub. And I think actually kind of, you know, what that means community by community may be different. So in some instances it could be, it's the only place that you can get stuff delivered and you have to come in to get it. But actually kind of it's convenient for the customer because they're doing other things when they come in, or it's close to them, or they don't have to be in. Similarly, if you kind of take it through to, say, some of the DRS stuff that's kind of kicking around, actually kind of, you know, I think that's an interesting one in terms of, one, the environmental sort of, you know, kind of general industry challenge around packaging and sort of, you know, what the kind of things are around that, but also about sort of what should the role of a convenience store be in that. Now, that could be everything from 0 to 100, really, couldn't it? You know, just in terms of,
could be every piece of packaging comes back.
Yeah,
to the store,
absolutely. Yeah, it could be certain things. Yeah. It could be it's just co-located, so kind of actually, kind of, it's not part of the actual store itself, but it's next to it, acknowledging that it's that hub, which is fine. So I think there's many challenges that sort of, you know, need to be kind of thought through more carefully, but inevitably, again, bringing it back to technology, there will be some things in there that actually kind of, you know, will knit it all together. So it is about sort of, you know, kind of how can you make it as easy for a retailer to sell a pint of milk as it is to pick up a parcel, as it is to fulfil a whole range of services that maybe we haven't dreamt of yet, but that could be sort of, you know, kind of fundamental to serving local communities and actually kind of, again, sort of, you know, the ongoing prosperity of convenience stores within those local areas.
Yeah. And just to sort of finish off here, we've talked quite a lot about retailer-facing tech and retailer-focused tech. What about consumer tech in convenience stores? So we saw at Summit last year, we saw a lot of tech in Milan in that store of the future about the screens and all the information on those screens. And we've seen other bits and pieces coming through in stores, little robots that are customer service assistants and that kind of thing. And I suppose with an awareness that we're sitting in a basement in East London and perhaps the market is not East London, it's the whole of the UK, because it can be very easy to get the blinkers on and go, this will work for this particular audience. Is there any smart tech or something that you think consumers are looking for or you've seen in a store that you think, yeah, that's what pretty much every store needs now?
I think the short answer is no, which is a very disappointing
answer. Which is great in itself.
Because I think, again, I'd go back to the solutions looking for problems sort of accusation. Digital screens is a brilliant example. So I remember about probably 10, 12 years ago, companies pitching up to the business I was working with at the time and selling in big digital screen networks and sort of, you know, kind of it's the future and we can make it work and sort of, you know, it's absolutely how it's going to happen. And it's never really taken hold. It's never really gone mass. Now, actually, kind of the cost dynamics are sort of, you know, much more improved now. And actually, kind of, I know some of the great work that people like High Street Digital are doing, you know, to really kind of crack that just in terms of the cost model and actually kind of, you know, how that works. But, you know, there's probably as many examples of that not working from an in-store interaction perspective as it kind of potentially working. There was a great example, which again sort of dates it, but it was probably about sort of 10 years ago. And it was an optician's in Melbourne, in Australia. So they had rows and rows of glasses and a sort of portrait upright screen in front. And basically what all this screen did is that when you were sort of trying on different glasses and sort of maybe trying out different frame and whatnot, and typically, particularly if your prescription is quite sort of aggressive, you might not be able to see how beautiful or how cool you look in your new pair of glasses. So all they did is that sort of when you put that on, you press a big red button on the screen, it takes a 5-second video of you looking cool and beautiful. You then put your normal glasses back on and then you watch that to kind of confirm if you are actually kind of looking kind of cool and beautiful. Now, that was sort of, you know, working.
Was that born out of people getting glasses and then saying, you told me I look really good in these?
well, it's that sort of like, you know, kind of like, you know, the kind of buyer's remorse almost,
yeah,
basically.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
But I think fundamentally where that came from was a sort of really clear bit of consumer insight where there was a problem.
Yeah.
And technology came in and provided an elegant solution. Now, actually, kind of, I guess, with all the kind of different kind of consumer tech things that are out there and actually kind of, you know, kind of, are they getting mass? Will it sort of really kind of work? I'd always kind of say, right, what problem is this fixing?
Mm.
Because actually, kind of, if you're solving a problem, regardless of whether it's with tech or not, actually, you've got a fighting chance of it working or really kind of taking hold. And I think that's the thing that I think we sometimes lose with a lot of the tech. There's lots of kind of shiny, dangly things, and we can probably all kind of rattle off over the last sort of 5 or 6 years in the sector things that have kind of come to light in 1 year and then disappeared the next year. So I think actually kind of this goes back to the kind of thing about as a retailer or as a sort of, you know, just generally kind of looking at technology, how do you place your bets? And I think that's the kind of toughest bit, because actually kind of there's a lot of things out there that are great solutions, but they haven't quite found the problem that they're trying to fix yet.
For example, you mentioned Summit. So last year we showed the store, the Supermarkets of the Future in Milan. We went to see it a couple of months ago. And a number of things there, but the one that probably stands out most is screens above displays. And when you pick up product, it then tells you more about that product. So on the one hand, going to Steve's point, is there a problem? Yeah, there is a problem, which is that you're getting more conscious consumers who are making more deliberate decisions about what they eat and the provenance of those products and the allergens. And
allergens
everything
specifically
else.
is a huge thing.
So those sorts of things. So there is a problem there. The I suppose the and there's another problem, which is that in a small store, you've only got so much space to display all that information. So doing it on a screen where it's dynamic, so the information changes depending on what you're actually looking at, that again seems to make sense as a solution to that problem. So Steve's absolutely right. What's the problem? The other thing is, what's the operational implementation of that? Because these screens were great with one problem: you couldn't read them. You couldn't actually read the information on the screen. And they were really dark. And you've been to that store as well.
Yeah, I went out there. It was A, quite difficult to read, and frustratingly, even more difficult to film because they're quite reflective.
Yeah, absolutely. Impossible. So I think that there probably will be some solutions in that direction of travel. And it might be that, and I'm sure they might get better screens, and all that technology will improve at a massive rate. So,
or everything goes possible. To mobiles.
Absolutely, and it comes up on there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think mobiles is an interesting opportunity. I don't think anyone's really cracked it yet. But I think rather than kind of thinking about how can I invest and install lots of screens, actually your customers are walking in with their own screens every day.
Yeah,
you don't have to worry about the investment cost because they're quite happily upgrading and evergreening that constantly. Yeah. So really it's about sort of how do you connect the mobile experience that's there with sort of, you know, kind of what's happening in the store. And I think actually kind of that's something where there have probably been a few things that have been tried and not really sort of, you know, kind of taken hold. But actually kind of, again, I think that like the autonomous vehicle sort of question, it almost becomes a kind of an untapped channel that we don't have to invest in terms of the technology, but actually the more the exam question is, well, how do you connect with that? Because we're all walking around with them, we're all kind of looking at them when we're kind of maybe waiting for sort of a couple of minutes if you're in a queue. So actually about sort of how do you tap into that, basically? And I think that's the thing that we haven't quite kind of cracked yet as an industry in terms of sort of how do you kind of effectively kind of communicate with customers, engage with them using that channel.
Yeah, I think absolutely right. And I suppose I should close by saying this is all for entertainment purposes only. Please do not make any investment decisions on the basis of anything you've heard today. And I would say thank you again to Steve for joining us.
Thank you
to James, as always, for joining us. I would just finish by saying all of this talk about technology, you'll hear much more at the Tech Showcase on the 5th of February, where Steve, you will hear from again on the panel, talking about the problems that the people presenting will be solving. The next big update on Tech Showcase is 28th of January, and that's when we will announce the shortlist for the companies that will be presenting on the day. So it's a great event, free event for retailers. You can book online at acs.org.uk. And otherwise, we will look forward to catching up with you soon.